a little bit about Dr. Weiss. He is currently a professor of practical theory and professor of pastoral ministry and the life sciences at our Concordia Lutheran Seminary in St. Louis. Dr. Weiss received his MS and PhD degree here at the University of Illinois in 1973. That was in biology, is that?
Yeah, biology, zoology, veterinary biology, etc., etc. American vegetable.
Great.
The sheep.
The sheep. Great. And then he went to school at Concordia Seminary in 1982. That's when I kind of remember you.
Yeah.
My childhood. I lived in Evertsville, Illinois, so did Pastor Weiss, and we're friends of my family. Our families are friends. Pastor at Bunker Hill in Illinois, that's real close to my little town, Dorsey, where I grew up. So my father is good friends with Pastor Weiss. And pastor at Our Savior in Springfield, Illinois, and now finally a professor at Concordia Lutheran Seminary. So, Bob,
okay, thank you. Here we go.
That's one of the granddaughters from Chicago. That's Kate. When you open up these things, you have to have somebody to have my family on here to run through and other things here. My dogs are senior citizens. Two of them are Dalmatian and a mutt. Married, five daughters. The first two oldest were baptized by Pastor Eggers here back in 69 and 71. One of the members here while I was a graduate student. So it's nice to come back here. I took a long way around coming down to university, just driving through Urbana this morning and kind of seeing some different things that are out there and haven't been back here for some time. So it was nice to come back. Now, the handout that you have in front of you, there's an awful lot of information here that covers us in the time we have. I kind of operate off of information overload so that there is an awful lot of information here. And we're going to try and get through as much as we can. I have some videos for plumbing so that you can see at least the political side of it. Republican Women's Organization in, that was a period of a lot of fun actually, in Southern Illinois. And they, boy, they took the firecracker group to be able to talk in front of somebody like that. Man, alive, they have a lot of questions. So there's a lot of PowerPoint stuff here. I'm going to go over this probably as rapidly as I can, but also to give you an opportunity to, let's see if this is going to work. It does all this. Somehow, some way, this thing is not working right here in terms of the, I'm not sure why, but such is life. At least the laser works. Always use this. Okay, well, anyway, let's go through this. I think you can all kind of see that. The outline you have in front of you, I'm not going to myself reach for this when I teach. I teach a class in genetics, I teach a class in a seminary called Genetic Science and Christian Perspective, Bioethics, which is a very general class, a class in studies of creation. We'll do that in Bible class here on Sunday. Talk a little bit about that, some of the controversial stuff there. Talk about what I call environmental ethics. I talk also in a graduate class called Contemporary Issues in Ethics. That's kind of fun. We'll work with movies like Matrix and things like that. But I like videos. I use that when I talk confirmation, a lot of videos. And let's see. Teach a class in aging. My Roger, he's a board-certified physician, grad in medicine, internal medicine. Mike Evers is on my school of medicine here. He's out in Chicago. His clinic is rated about 30, maybe it's in the top 30 here in the United States in terms of geriatric clinics. He didn't even know that one of his patients can range between, on the average, 82 to 103. He does have younger patients like me that are 60. But most of his patients are older. And so he comes down and speaks at the seminary two or three times a year on primarily Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. That is his area that he studies. He's worked for the president. He was on Phil Donahue once, but left because it was a setup. Phil said, do you want an autograph picture? He said, no, we'll get back in your room. Same thing to the airport. So he and his nurse came back to Chicago. So he worked for Governor Thompson years ago on aging issues, lectures a lot. So he knows his stuff from Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. And my youngest brother, Russell, as I said, is that he's recovering from knee surgery, arthroscopy, played some basketball and re-injured some cartilage and a couple other congenital problems they found. So he's a major recovery of the man. Mary, as I said, 5 daughters, 2 dogs, all women. So that's why I was finishing my base. I put a jacuzzi tub in the basement for the youngest daughter, was Christina. She's going to SIU with herself. She's a recovering anorexic, so she's working on a book on this. Wants to go to graduate school. In that area, eating disorders plus autism. She's been working with autistic kids for about 2.5 years. One daughter is married in Orlando, is married to a tumble monkey from the Lion King show. He escaped from Cuba. He was an Olympic gymnast there and national circus team. And taught the first man in gymnastics for a while, but didn't like that enough. He just passed his license to real estate. He's going on to be a broker, goes to college. And just joined the Lutheran Church down there, and right away he's just an usher. He gets really involved, goes to Bible class. If he has to work in the morning, he goes to Bible class and Sundays and church in the morning. Then he goes to work. So then the third oldest, Kimberly, she's single, still chasing. She's in Nashville. She has a degree in mass communication, does graphic arts down there, plus the back of work for some of those singers you hear about. A singer, writes music, having fun down there. Then Suzanne is in Chicago with her husband and 3 children. David Lombard, the oldest I mentioned, she's a physician up in Chicago, up in Wapan, Wisconsin, northeast of Madison. She's a family practitioner plus obstetrician in 2 areas, delivers a lot of babies. And she has 2 daughters, her and her husband practice medicine there. So that's kind of life. My name is Bob Weiss. So I'm going to move on with this, and let's just see if this is not going to work. So we'll just use this. The thing that I always emphasize as a Christian is going back to the basics. I don't know where all of you are in terms of the Bible or Christian or not, but from my viewpoint, I take everything back to the Bible. I don't try and create a doctrine where doctrine doesn't exist for these issues. Doesn't talk about 28 ways to make a baby in the Bible, but it does talk about marriage, procreation, living a life of Christ. Doesn't talk about cloning from stem cell research, but it does talk about taking care of children. You know, would a clone have a soul, be a human being, whose sperm is not used? And I'll tell you this up front, if that's the case, and they're not human beings, as many scientists believe, from a theological viewpoint, then we look at the Bible and find out, well, Adam wasn't created with sperm, Eve wasn't created with sperm, neither was Jesus, but they were all human beings. So that argument theologically falls through. And I think even scientifically it falls through. And I'll share some stuff I was telling Dan and just in the discussions with the people at Washington University who are 99% pro-embryonic stem cell cloning. Except for one doctor, Dr. Chloe, he's really the scum of the picnic at that university. And they're trying to move him over to their side, and they patronize him. And he was a PhD MD, and he does not agree that we ought to be doing that in stem cell research. He's the lone guy at, in that area at that university, and they don't even let him speak. And we'll talk more about that later. So I always go back to the Bible from a Lutheran perspective, back to the Catechism, that basically is a good roadmap to help structure our thinking. And then, of course, worship liturgy. So where you begin is where you're going to go. If you do not believe as a Christian that the Bible is center to your life, and you can kind of start with science and not the Bible, then you can go with what you want to go with and believe what you want to believe. If you go with the Bible, that's where you're going to go. So you're going to take the science and plug it into the Bible. If the science doesn't fit, like evolution doesn't fit, then you're going to say, well, that doesn't fit. So what's evolution trying to do, of course, is remove God from people's lives. So science doesn't fit, like parenting, and you're freezing embryos, doesn't fit the frozen embryo, because you can't parent a frozen embryo. Then that doesn't fit. Then that's removing God. So I'm pretty basic, and that's how I do it. So as a scientist, and having taught it, Wayne State University of Medicine for about a little over 6 years, and then did a postdoc in cell biology. Looking at this, I even brought a book up here. I bring books because sometimes people, they really don't believe what I'm saying. But I have a book up here called Human Embryology and Teratology. Teratology, of course, is like bees, pterodactyls, and things like that. $320 for this book that's used in medical schools. So I read these things because people say, right, but I have the Code of Medical Ethics of this year from the AMA. And we'll talk about what does that say when we compare Shiloh. Just in case somebody, you know, you soon learn as a scientist and a theologian, you come loaded for bear. Not to put people down, but discussing it, to debate. So let's just go on. So I always return to the basics. This is kind of where I go, is go to the basics. And the basics, of course, deal with Christology, looking at things from Christ's perspective at the cross, because that's where I am redeemed, to be a witness of the gospel. And that may include law as well. People continue, and we'll talk about that when we get to homosexuality. So the last thing on that outline that deals with Paul's notes on Christian necessity to help others. This is a very good text. It's also found in 1 Corinthians 6 about all things are lawful. It could say possible here in the Greek, but not all things are helpful or beneficial. All things are possible or lawful, but not all things build up. So you don't seek your own, but the good of others. This is a text that deals with slogans. Paul had slogans in his day. People were just kind of doing what they want to do. Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? What are some slogans today? I like audience participation. What are some slogans today that people use that are very similar to all things are possible, all things are lawful? What are some slogans today that people use? Exactly. Feel good, do it. Anything else?
You deserve it.
Have it your way.
If it's to be, it's up to me.
If it's to be, it's up to me.
My body, my choice.
Anything else? If it feels good, do it. Just do it. These are slogans. My grandpa Schultz used to say, as he'd sit in front of the radio with his, as he called long neck Budweiser, when they came out in long cases, you know, they opened them up in the middle. Don't see that anymore. And he'd say, all that is new is not true, and all that is true is not new. Things haven't changed. Technology, of course, avails us of seeing more things and doing more things, but sin, grace is grace, it hasn't changed. We just are more familiar with it because we see and hear more things. So, Paul had to deal with the same problems. So biotechnology. I'm going to go through some things that are, we don't have time, just kind of an overview, this very first one. And this is what biotechnology does in terms of assisting human. I use C.S. Lewis, you probably read, there's a space trilogy out called Saracen's Head. That's a chapter in That Hideous Strength, which was written by Sir David Lindsay in about 1576, called In Dialogue, the first dialogue. And it's all about the book of Genesis. It's written in broke English, like Mile is spelled M-Y-L-E. And C.S. Lewis was way ahead of his time because he talked about reproductive technology, he talked about all this stuff, but this book was written in about 46, 47 in response to Hitler's philosophy of the Aryan race. And so when you read Lewis, you see this in here about the perfectibility of man, removing God from the equation and making man the center, not God. And so there's a lot of things in this particular book. The main thing, of course, is where technologies do tend to become an idol. And the other one, of course, is this is the big thing, man controlling man using nature, hence its own abolition. This is what C.S. Lewis, when he wrote his book in 1944, when he started off going against Hitler, was called the Abolition Ban, where you have man controlling man using nature. And so there are some things with this particular book that you can learn. And then, of course, in theology, we deal with Noah and we deal with power, both good, Genesis 6, Genesis 11. Both good technology, not a problem, but this is very Christ-centered, God-centered, covenant-centered. I'm going to do what God says to do, in spite of what people are saying for 120 years, and here I'm going to do what I want to do. They build the city and the tower, and they do. A similar substance in the Hebrew language, very similar to the pitch they used here, also similar here in the city and the tower. I don't know. Now, this is what I call a hot tub discussion. I was with my friend Dr. Jack Fiennes in Springfield. Pastor Elliott is a good friend of Dr. Fiennes. He's a clinical psychologist, a shrink type person. And you kind of sit and wonder, well, why did they use this pitch? Well, just a few hundred years before, they had a big flood. And if they would protect themselves, and they think the flood's coming, I don't know. This is, we don't know if I would exactly say that, then they're going to make sure that the water doesn't get it. So they used this kind of substance, and it was becoming more frequently used because it would keep the water out, as they hoped. So this was the city and the tower. So this is the man's self, man using man, a man controlling man using nature. So you have these two sort of examples of paradigms that help people structure their thinking in terms of technology. And that's why I put up we've gone through this, imitate God, not be a playing God. Of course, in Genesis is very typical there. This is where playing God begins, where you have in Genesis chapter 3, 5, God knows, and in Hebrew it's called participle, he keeps on knowing. That your eyes will be open. You know, when you eat this fruit, your eyes are going to be open. And here's the kicker. The NIV, ESV doesn't quite get the Hebrew in other translations, but it's the same word in Hebrew. God knows that when you eat this fruit, your eyes are going to be open, and you're going to be like God. It could be translated God's. Knowers of good and evil, not just knowing. Usually in this Bible, the NIV, it's a self-study Bible. The Bible studies itself. It's an interesting title. I know Lutherans don't laugh a lot, but my wife and my kids are saying, "Oh, here goes another one of the jokes." But it says knowing of good and evil. No, there's a difference between knowing and being a knower. A knower in Hebrew means one who participates in God. And so Adam and Eve and Satan tempted them to participate. They said, "Why not?" So she saw the fruit, took the fruit, ate the fruit, fell into sin, turned and gave it to Adam. He saw the fruit, took the fruit, ate the fruit, fell into sin. Now, since it's one flesh, that's one event. It's not that, well, she did it first, he did it second. They're one flesh. It's you. They fell into sin together. Same time, boom. God didn't wear a Rolex watch. And from that point on, everything happens. You have a first case of depression in the Bible, Cain. Cain, why are you down?
Kane said, well, among my brothers, keeper, you know, it's sarcastic. So, yeah, murder. All the Ten Commandments are there. The natural law is there before you get to Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. All the Ten. And then God says, excuse me, you know how you've got a refrigerator with kids? You got to put notes up. Do I have to remind you again so you write big notes? My wife has always reminded me. It's really interesting that as you grow older, it is true. Your short-term memory dissipates quickly. Long-term, no problem. Short-term, what did I can't remember right off. I mean, I'll be 60 next Friday, so I'm really in trouble. So you just keep eating food with preservatives and you'll be okay. So all of this stuff, so in Genesis, that kind of happened. By the way, if you want to get up and eat, and if you have questions, let me know. Dan's got a microphone. We'll deal with them as they come up in your mind. It's not a problem. Okay. So let's assisted reproductive technology. The big thing, of course, abortion. The elective abortion, this is interesting, the man was telling me that he kept putting these signs up in his office on his door and people kept tearing them down. I don't know, this is just an opinion. I think people that saw the word homosexuality, and I worked with homosexuals, I counseled a couple of them, and they told me this is what happens. They'll tear it down. Because I'm going to talk about the genetics of this, and the neuromuscular, the hypothalamic study. None of this proves homosexuality. I brought a paper with me earlier on this. It's not my opinion. I'm a scientist. I do research. Can't find it. And we'll talk about that. So, is this child in here? Now, the fetus, embryo, zygote, of course, they got to be covered. Those are fine in biology. It's just that they have been used in a dehumanizing way. That the embryo is not a human being. Of course, it's a human embryo. It's not a human being. But in biology, you can use that term, and we'll see, well, what do the doctors of embryology, the people who study the embryo, do they say it's a human being? Or do they just say it's a blob of cells? That's important. There's a scientific theology. And this is where I find the scientific community ignores what science says, and then they create their own terms. And this is the dogfight I'm having with people at Washington University. I have my students write letters to the editor. I don't like big papers. I don't like reading them. They're all a lot of plagiarized off the internet. I don't care for internet resources a lot. I like library original. You can find them. So I have them write letters to the editor, and we have 90 letters where we read by 30 students, three apiece, and already three have been published. So they go, whoa, it works. Yeah, so write a letter to the editor. When you put yourself out on the limb, you just have to know what side to fall off, that's all. Otherwise, you're in trouble. Okay. Make a baby in the womb. Outside. This is up in the body and outside the body. And glass in the body. Well, let's take first outside, in the body. And artificial insemination, we know. Gift. How many know what gift is? Anybody know what that is? One person. Two people. One person. Now, understanding well, I'm giving you the science. I'm not talking on anybody that's talking to this. I have some disagreement with some of the use of this technology. The freezing of the embryo, I don't agree with that. Get a lot of it. Okay? Just don't agree with it. Maybe some of you have used it. I don't know. But I talked with women who used it. I was involved with the first case of embryo adoption. It almost split a family, split a church. And we'll talk with Hannah. I don't have time to go with Hannah. Hannah is now, 6 years old. One of 20 embryos that were adopted by a family in California from a family in South Dakota. 19 died and survived. So we'll talk about that. So that means what they do is they remove the sperm. Now that instead of masturbation, they use aspiration. Then they remove the oocytes, not eggs. Eggs is for cuisine, Easter, and frying. Seriously. I think it's dehumanizing. To say we have an egg. No. Eggs come from chickens, and they'll call them an egg in embryology. I mean, in this book here, I'm just telling you, this book here costs $320. That's medical books, you know, or science books here. And they never call it an egg. It's an oocyte. It's round and it's a cell. So they take them out, they clean them up.
They pull up millions of sperm, have an air bubble, about three eggs, oocytes, three oocytes, air bubble, millions of sperm. So sperm, air bubble, three oocytes, air bubble, sperm. Then they laparoscopy right through here, higher than 4B2, and they're injected in to get about 20-25% fertilization rate, and implantation, and birth. Okay, that's gamete. Gametes, put them into the upper end of fallopian tube. That's what that's all about. That's in the body. Outside the body, of course, you have in vitro fertilization, sperm and egg in the deep dish. One oocyte, lots of sperm. And that's how the New Journal of Medicine, the average cost for implantation and birth is $67,000 for one cycle. It could be less. I have videos they brought up with me, we don't have time to see them, where one couple spent $40,000 in a year, an attorney and a physician. And two cycles, average is $118,000. It's all published. And then, so this is a very big issue. They not only use only the good sperm they see, they pull them out, they take the good sperm, the good oocytes, they keep those. When they fertilize them, they look at them, it's all by eye, they grade them. Sometimes it's on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 the best, sometimes it's A, B, C, D. Sometimes there's subsets of those, they look at them, are they dying, are they dividing? And if they're not looking good, they discard them, they're destroyed. Man is doing this, not the body. So when you make something, you determine its outcome. So man, I'm using that in the generic sense, they're determining whether or not these eggs are viable for implantation. Not the body. That's not my opinion. So they're graded. And the ones that aren't used are frozen slowly. They start them off at about minus 50 degrees centigrade and freeze them at about minus 196, depending on the, what they call liquid nitrogen war, anywhere from minus 196 centigrade to maybe minus 120. 7 could be, I think that's about minus 326 there. They're frozen, they're left there. 3 you keep for these little straws, sometimes 2. And then when they're thawed, they're actually thawed pretty quickly. And in thawing, anywhere from 13 to about 85% will die in thawing because of crystals and just happen. It's a huge business. And it takes $500 a year to keep them frozen. $1,000 depends on the clinic. So, so it's a huge industry. It's about $2 billion a year business in the world. It's worldwide. And in England, after 5 years, they destroy whatever embryos from that clinic. In the United States, there are 400,000 of them. This is published in the journal Nature. 400,000 unclaimed embryonic human beings. And this, of course, gets into cloning. We'll talk about that. So, direct egg sperm injection here, or intracytoplasmic sperm injection. Sounds complicated, but what we're talking about here is where they find one good wiggly sperm and one good oocyte, and they inject it right inside. There's a big, thick covering around the egg called the zona pellucida, which helps protect the oocyte. And they inject it right through that into the oocyte, and then it fertilizes, if it is God's will, the oocyte and become a child. They're having some difficulties in noticing down the road that some of these children are having, and they're starting to study children made with IVF, and they're saying you may want to reconsider the use of this and regulate it, but there's no regulations. So this is direct egg sperm injection. One sperm, one egg, and because the zona pellucida is just a big covering around the oocyte. Eventually, the oocyte, after fertilization, right before in implants, around 6-7 days, could be up to 11 days, it hatches out. It's a hatching process here. Okay, this is 28 ways to make a baby. Sorry about this up here, but here are the 4 ways. Now, this is artificial insemination, gamete, and this is whole husband, wife, surrogate womb. Somebody else's womb, Donor sperm, wife egg, donor sperm, surrogate egg, and womb. I mean, that's four combinations. Then you have gamete using the same sort of issue. You've got 12 here. Now if you go down to in vitro and direct egg sperm injection, you have 2 times 8 is 16, 12 is 28. And that doesn't include cloning. 28 possible ways. And this has all come from 1978 when the first test tube baby, Louise Brown, was created in England, and the first baby was created here in the United States in 1981. since 78, you have 27 years or so, you've had an additional 28 methods added, just in that chart. And there's other ways they do things. I mean, they remove ovaries from women now, chop them up into pieces. I have a thing here from Law and Order where they did this. And then they freeze those chunks of women's ovaries and later come back, thaw them out, and recover the oocytes. Yeah. Women are born with it depends on what you're reading, a couple million oocytes at birth, and they're down to a couple hundred thousand or so at puberty. And you lose about, where you can have produce oocytes 1 to 3 times in one 30-day cycle or so. And so, when they stop coming out, puberty or premenstrual syndrome problems, then you can have a lot of other issues going on. So, okay, moving right along. These are just things in technology that you can see. Sign over if you want. They have to sign the child back to you. There are court cases on this where Whitey was the first time a surrogate womb was used and she wanted the child back. Now when she has visitation rights. So there are I got a thing called Law, Medicine, Ethics where you read about these court cases. Some have wrongful sex determination, wrongful birth, and all these suits that are out there by these children. Well, all these things you can read, crazy gone, we've been through this. Issue here. Now, if you have questions, just ask. Yes, sir.
$46,000 for a womb.
Yes.
How much does the woman get?
The woman, well, actually, the woman is paid for oocytes. The no-name oocytes can be anywhere from $2,500 to $75,000. I would imagine if you look at the University of Illinois, say, school paper, you'll see this aid donation one, and you go to the website. They'll have a fee. Most fees range now $4,000 to $12,000. The womb, this is what they are paid.
That's in other words, they
are paid all the medical expenses. They're all covered. They're all insured. They're all bonded. All wombs.
Are there rules about them smoking, drinking, anything like that?
Oh yeah. I mean, you have to. There's depends on the attorney when they write all of this stuff up. You see, so you have to understand. They're paid for time and risk. When they donate, they can't be paid for the oocytes or the womb. They're paid for time and risk. I mean, I don't know what it's like bearing a child, so I'm going to wipe it through this 5 times. But it's risky. My daughter lost a baby, and Nathaniel was about almost 20 weeks old. And she delivers babies. Of course, after the baby died, I don't know why. Genetic studies didn't show anything. And of course, after she delivered the baby, dead already, a lot of people and women came to her and she would sit and said, well, this is happening to me too, Dr. Weiss, or Dr. Humphrey, this is happening. And the nurse, the doctor who delivered the baby, had this happen 3 times. So at any rate, the point is that they're giving money for risk and time.
So it's a whole new legal profession.
Of course. And they come up with terms like I mentioned, prezygote. They transfer the issue. So this is a huge issue in terms of law. So when men and women go through this, they have to find attorneys that know how the law is, because it really is an unregulated industry. Here's IDEN, just to show you, right off the computer, IDEN.com, donor catalog. Anybody want? Right there. For all the sites. For the oocyte donor. in-laws are dairy farmers.
And they do. So they create cows.
There's a new thing from extended fertility here where they are now trying to freeze oocytes. It hasn't succeeded very well. But because the oocytes are softer, more sperm, or have this thing called acrosomes, very hard, so you can freeze all the sperm you want forever. Oocytes, more difficult. That's what, you know, extended fertility means we're going to give you another way to have a child to avoid the moral issues of freezing an embryo. So now we're going to freeze oocytes. And that's what this is all about. So if you go to a search engine and type in extended fertility, you can see what the cost is and all of that stuff. And they talk about risk and time. And so surgical removal, we've talked about this. That's with echogenesis. This is artificial wombs. They are working on this. They have created them over in Japan. In fact, I saw a goat that came. They started in the womb. Got the umbilical cords going, then took the goat out into amniotic-like fluid, hooked it to a heart-lung machine and so forth, got it to develop full term, and it lived for about 8 months after. And so when you see these movies, like Clone, this is an NBC movie, which is a very good movie. You can get this, you know, it's like $15 now. This was 6 Day Arnold Schwarzenegger, and we see this, oh, this is all science fiction. It's not science fiction anymore. Artificial wombs are working. To help women who are, now this is it, nothing against women, this is what they're saying in the literature. To help women who want to continue working, but then have the baby outside the womb, and don't want to be bothered with caring or risk injury. I mean, this is what they're saying. This is what people need to know. Now you plug that into the Bible. This is a real emotional issue. 10-15% of all men and women are infertile. About 25-35% are the reasons for women. A lot of it's endometriosis, tubal occlusions, and so forth. With men, it's either oligospermia, that is, they have a few sperm, or no sperm, or something else, they're congenital. That's about 35%. 20% are both men and women together. And then there's always 1-2%, everything looks good through an exam, but don't know why they can't have a child. This is a huge emotional issue. Huge. Now, I have baptized children, too, from in vitro. Usually in the parish. Pastors are here. I know a little great. Things happen kind of after the fact sometimes. Couples come in, and they say, I wish we could have talked to you. But I still have, not a lot, but more frequently, women to call. And I just got a letter from this clinic that said they have 7 frozen embryos, what do we want to do with them? And they haven't thought about it. You see, they really haven't. They knew it was going to happen, but a lot of things go by, and some of the doctors and clinicians at these clinics are not telling all this. It's in fine print when they read it. And they want to have a baby, fine. So then I, and other people, and other pastors, and other Christians, have to take them where they're at. You don't go back and, what did you do that for? No. Just like Jesus took the woman in the well, or all the people in Marcel. You know, you take them where they're at. He didn't slam dunk the lady from Samaria down the well. It was not one you've had 5 to 1 year old with this. You know, you take them where they're at. You know, God's logos, they work. They work. Okay, so moving right along. Cloning, to replace. Here's what you want to look it up. It's right there. Nature, Body, Nightlight.org. This is the only there's two organizations that are involved with embryonic human adoption. So you can adopt a human being, an embryo. But you have to adopt all of them. Now, why would you have to adopt all of them? Think about this. What do you think? Do you have a clinic here in this area? I think you do. That is involved with fertility. And they have, let's say you have 5 frozen embryos left over, and you say, the doctor said, we can't put any more back into your womb. But you can put them up for adoption, you can give them up for research, you can have them destroyed, have some possibilities. And you say, no, we want to put them up for adoption. Now, why does a couple have to adopt all of them? What do you think, say, would be the issue that you want to morally think about? Why not just adopt 2 and then maybe somebody adopts 3? What could happen now in the world? University of Illinois. Pardon me? Exactly. They could meet, a brother and a sister could meet. meet, not know that they're brother and sister. Not be, it's a possibility. It's a long shot, to be quite honest. But that's part of the liturgy that they talk about. So you've got to adopt them all. And the case that has the most adopted, we're 20 so far, they have about 110 children so far that have come from this adoption program. But it's not going very well. And you have to pay for risk and time, attorneys are involved, and so forth. Okay, so that's nightlife.org, and you'll go to Snowflakes. And the only place I don't like using, as I said, internet if possible, but they don't have a book out there. So you got to go there and find it. By genetics, the Human Genome Project, this, of course, is tracking how many genes out that you know, and are not seen by people. Well, I'm going to bring it back to show you how to use this in teaching confirmation. You know, God did all this. Fearfully and wonderfully made. From my viewpoint, that's what the Bible says. How many feet or meters, if you're a meter person, of genetic material is in one, say, one body cell? Anybody want to take a guess? Now, if you all come back after lunch, we'll talk more about this. This is a long day, and we're going to cannulate your vein here and put coffee in it so we're all awake. What? How many feet? Anybody? Just take a guess in one body cell of genetic material. They're all chromosomes, all 46 end to end, including the sex chromosomes, X and Y for me, XX. Everybody has them in one body cell. The women have XX in the skin cell. I have an XY. It's all there. How many feet? Anybody? Don't worry about right or wrong.
Six.
Who said six? See, he's an engineer.
I guess.
You did. That's a good guess. That's good. Yeah.
I figured, you know, that's the average height of a human.
There you go. It's 1.8 meters, laying end to end in one cell. That's a lot. And enough to go back and forth to the sun about 250 times. And God put it. And when you brush your teeth or when you take a shower, there's millions of these cells. And guess what? They just come back as cheap cells. Well, in most cases, hair cells, skin cells. That's how it works. God did it. God's been cloning way before we ever did. You lose a fingernail, like when I was building the basement, I lost a lot of them. Didn't lose my religion, but I lost a lot of fingernails. And they all came back. So God's been doing this a long time. And there's more we can say about the Human Genome Project. But initially, chromosomes, of course, have a center part there divided. This is P, this is Q. And down here in this area, the X chromosome supposedly was published in the journal Science in 1993. The so-called XQ, lower XQ, looks like XQ28 region. They're all numbered from top to bottom, 1 so many from 34, and then from the middle up, 1 to so many. And this was XQ28, but supposedly they found a so-called gay gene. They said they reported it, and I brought it by. Just again, to let you know, scientifically, they haven't found it. So you lay all these chromosomes back to back, and you get 1.8 meters. Okay. So the Human Genome Project, about 40,000 genes now. They started in 1985 by the Department of Energy. That's what started. 1990, they started doing the research on this. Through private, Craig Venter and Francis Collins. Watson started it. He's a panspermian, and that family. Craig, that means DNA came from outer space. By the way, mission to Mars, again, in confirmation, I use it in the seminary. The very end of mission to Mars, it's all about so called panspermian. That means extraterrestrial people. And don't they all look alike? Oh, don't do something like that. They all look, all the Mars people look the same. All kinds of thin and long heads. And all the DNA comes from extraterrestrials, and then they threw them out to the rest of the universe. And of course, some of them came here to the world, and that's how we all came to be. But that also means evolution. That's one way. So, I was wondering if that's true. How come we're not as smart as they are supposedly? I never figured that one out. If they're so advanced, you know, genetically, and they can float, make spaceships. How come we can't do that? We work that we have the genes. I wise have the people that believe in spaceships, Mars type thing, and they never answer that. I mean, how? Oh, we have any problem? Yeah, their DNA, their code, we should have it. So I've never got an answer on that. So all of this stuff is, you know, sex selection. This was started in Fairfax, Virginia. And this is what happened with sex selection, girl or boy. See, this is all. What I'm saying to you also is published in common magazines, the gatekeepers. People read about this. And in my class, a lot of the students have never, oh, I don't do this. Now they all look at newspapers and everything. I gave a similar talk just on reproductive technology and cloning at Russell's Church late last year. And after that, people started to see, I see this in newspaper all the time now. It's all there. And so sex selection is there. Family balancing. This family had a child who was severely disabled. They didn't want any more children. This is just January 26th, a little year ago, of course. In 04, this is not called family balancing. You see how they construct the terminology. This is part of the political agenda. And the definition of political correctness is what? Criminalizing common sense. And so they had this whole herd. They did not. So they did this through genetic testing. The ones that had the tested the embryos that were quote unquote defective as an unnecessary child, those were destroyed. And these were put into the womb. Pre-implantation genetic testing, they do this. I have in my class, we can do it here at a time. You put a needle in, take a cell out. The cell has, of course, 46 chromosomes in the embryo, including XX or XY, and they test it for genetic problems. And it goes, whoa, we don't want this child. Go, we keep this child, and you have this. Family, this is what's called now. And this is emotional. Well, I like that. I want to have it. You know, people say to me, why don't you have a boy? Well, the sperm that apparently came for me had more X chromosomes than a Y. I don't know. It's God's deal with this. See, I call this God's technology. Not man's. And this family, they had three boys. They wanted a girl. And there are lawsuits, not a lot. I can't give you a percent, but I'm seeing this more frequently in journals. I can't give you a percent where, boy, here's another case of wrongful sex discrimination. Yeah. Not a lot now. You know, 1 or 2 a year. Yeah.
What does that mean? So the child is suing?
Yes. Yes. So they go, oh, yeah. Well, I didn't want to be this. Well, behind it, Dan, of course, is much. We agree with you. Then we have, if I'm in the way, you say, boom, place. Yeah, boom, place. Okay. All of this stuff, genetic safety, go to safetyclone.com. This is an organization, real, that cloned the first cat with the people at the University of Wisconsin. Yeah. Advanced cell technology and other advanced. And we'll show you how we have it a little bit. We'll talk about therapeutic reproductive cloning and these a little bit later. But here's some more things that are involved. The God gene. This was the front cover of Time magazine last year, the God gene. This is the guy who supposedly discovered the gay gene. And this is what he says. Our faith is hardwired into our genes. See, in the Lutheran Church, we would say the soul animates the body. That the soul is dependent on genetics. Because that says, well, if you kill the body, you must kill the soul. But the soul, you know, you can't kill it. But here it is. We are hardwired because you see some people that are more emotional than others. So it's the serotonin level and the dopamine level. And that's why people get more emotional. That's why some are more Christian or more Jewish. It doesn't discriminate the God gene. Of course, he's got a capital. You know, but this is what's happening. People go, oh, really? So that's not the way. It's the gene maybe doing. Yeah. It's called the gene maybe. It's called genetic reductionism. Reducing everything to the genes. And that's what this book is about. And with live technology, we'll come back to this when we look at the videos from Terry Schiavo. It's a great text, Job 14:14. If a man dies, what do you do? The AMA, they consider nutrition, mechanical ventilation, and hydration as artificial. brought the book just in case anybody wonders. Here it is, Code of Medical Ethics, 2004 and 2005. I get these every year. About 35% of all doctors belong to the AMA. My brother doesn't, my daughter doesn't, my son-in-law doesn't. I never belong to it when I talk medicine. Used to be a pretty good organization, but now they've just changed terminology from the vegetative. They've gone to pre-embryo, grade of abortion, et cetera, et cetera.
Did you say 35%?
About 35%. That's my calculation. And this is off their website, where you sit and they say we're having trouble keeping members and getting members. Now, I do get their journal. I get JAM. I love the name JAM. Journal American. I get this. I read these journals because it helps me tell people what's going on. And that's my responsibility, is to give people information that they can hopefully assimilate. We'll talk more about these other things, donor, dishonor, and so forth, about the AMA and more later. So we're back to presuppositions. That's where we go. Where you begin is where you're going to go from a Christian perspective. So we go back to the basics, and that's what you're going to hear me talk about for the rest of the day, are the basics. Now, the first article on your outline, I'm going to go through this real quick. In terms of the Apostles' Creed, then we're going to take a break for a minute, is everything is based on what we have been given. That's God's gift language, not what we have. It's what we've been given. Gift language, to directly look at the first article. The second article is not about me, it's about what God's done for me again. Given me his righteousness. That's what the second article is all about. Third article is all about sanctification. My identity is in baptism as a Christian Lutheran, baptized into the death and resurrection of Christ. So when I'm talking to a Christian about technology, this is sort of like, Roman 4. When I talk to a Christian about technology, I begin with their Christian identity. Who they are in Christ. That's what I do. So our theology of faith that teaches us this is very important. Because if we're going to use the technology based on our faith, then that faith ought to witness the Christ in me. It's that simple. So my question to you, and I'm not picking on anybody, does freezing an embryo witness the Christ? Now you got to answer those. They're tough questions. They're not easy. Okay? The destruction of an embryo, because you don't want it, and it's unnecessary, does that witness the Christ in me? So, the main point here is, on the basis of genetic information, the unborn and born are labeled defective and unnecessary because it's based on what they have, not what they have been given. If you know anybody with a Down's child, or a spina bifida, or any other disabled child, you tell us with a couple of you could have run. Not going to put you. They're going to defend what God has given them. My daughter's just a babysitter for Michael, who is now actually went to college. You know, got a degree. We've seen him in movies. One of the smartest young ladies I ever ran into in Bucker Hill, when I was a child, Mark Bolton's spinal doctors, of course, going to do alpha fetal protein blood tests, which can be called doctors. And the doctor will say, if your alpha fetal protein is kind of high, you might have a child's down or some other disorder, so you might want to consider guess what abortion. Now, they may say, on the other hand, this may help you find out how to care for this child, so you can talk to people. But it could be a false positive, just like genetic amniocentesis, where they go into the amniotic fluid early and pull out some cells and check them. See? And some doctors do that specifically for the issue of abortion. Some do it so that you know it. Perhaps it may come and you can take care of it. But is it going to change whether or not you get a child? So you can do with it what you want. So the world's view, just a little bit here, is this postmodern thought, which has its the same today. It's just a word we use, but it's still here. Resistance to Christian message has been going on ever since Adam and Eve took that first lunch break. All truth is relative. Jesus works for me, Christ will look good for you. And, you know, sex okay and all this stuff, yada, yada, yada. By the way, the CDC has just come out with a report that abstinence works. Yeah, we're pushing it now. Believe it or not, CDC is wanting to push abstinence because of the oral sex, not the vulnerable West. If I was our saviors, I wouldn't like that. Because then you can still get a lot of STDs, human papillomavirus, and other things can still be transmitted. But that's what a lot of it is doing. Deconstruction. Tear things down. Tear language, tear your government, tear it down. That's a big thing in postmodern. And so things haven't changed. It was just been this way. They just give it a different name, postmodern. And then what's coming, I think Dan knows this, are called post-humans. Uploading people into computers. That's what they're working on. One More Man, One and Two, this movie, early movie with Denzel Washington called Virtuality, loads you up with a computer. There are some people like computer chips in them, like they put computer chips into dogs. Just to identify them. And that's called, by the way, that is called transhumanism. That's moving a person into a more perfect person evolution. You can go to transhuman.com and get all of their seven principles. It's all there. This is a huge organization, and it's growing. Our go to foresight.com. Transhumanism is real. People are, so it's all relevant. This is a TV program. For Dad's Day, his parents are straight, well, it's all relevant. Can't they all just get along? This is why I think people toward the sign off the door. Because they saw what I was going to talk about. Okay? It's instead of coming and saying, let's talk about it. No, we're going to take care of that. What do I know? I'm a postal leader from the University of Illinois. Now, I don't read, I don't study like none of us read and study anything, of course. So I'm just, you know, what can I say? Darwin atheistic evolution. This is a big issue. This is a Math Begins Turn 1. I just put this together, of course. Kind of a, wow, math is something related. They call me Pika because of plain Pika delivery. Grandpa Pika, he's not my relative, banana or no banana. And then he says, man, I just don't get any respect. I really don't think, and I studied this in science, but I know here at U of I, there are a lot. I got C, you don't get C's in graduate school, but I did because I disagreed with the professor here. Taking a class on ecology and evolution and so forth. And he gave me see. I mean, I'd like the answer that he wanted, then I kind of say, but this doesn't fit really science. That is a scientific method. Oh, gee, I went and talked to the guy. Sorry. You got a book. So I just don't see it. When I studied skulls and they find this new thing in China, the hobbit, you know, this little. And then they put hair. Tomorrow I'm going to show this to hair all over the body. It's National Geographic. And you know what they say in National Geographic? We really don't know this, but this is the artist's rendition. But everybody sees this and they believe it. They don't know. But if it came from monkeys, overall monkeys, then we have to have had that. But it is, and I have debated evolution. I said, so you know for sure that we had hair. Well, we have to if we came. No. Don't give me the conditions. Did we or didn't? And give me the evidence. Have you found a skeleton with hair? No. Well, the Bible says, well, that's no. The Bible talks in absolutes. You're talking in subjective language. So, of course, when I talk about this with other people, I bring physical anthropology books, paleoanthropology books, and quote them. I just quote them. Like when we talk about Mormonism, I quote the Mormons. Of course, in evolution, death is natural, and in the Bible, it's not. It's cursed. It's a result of sin. They don't want it. But this is, of course, we're at the end of our mind. This is Darwin. This is sort of, I have my eyes now, like, hi, Darwin, I created you. Woo! You know, he's wrong. He's wrong. And then, in Darwin's suffering is for nothing, and this, you know, Peterson, anybody heard of Peterson? Yeah, this guy is a philosopher. By the way, you know, he's called the best interest utilitarian. parents. It sounds complicated. All that means is what Christopher Reeve, Michael J. Fox said about embryos, it's the greatest good for the greatest number. It's a group mentality. Do things to keep people happy. So we have all these 400,000 embryos for the greatest good for the greatest number. Use them for embryonic stem cell research. And Peter Singer, this guy thinks that after a child's born with Downs or something, start with that. It's in your best interest to have a child that is more perfect. That's Peter Singer. And a lot of people say, oh, I don't believe in Peter Singer. Oh, give me a break. Just read it. Yes, they did. But they don't use his name. But in his book, Practical Ethics, which is not tough to read, that's where you see where we, the animals, are more important than humans. There's a book out, you can get this off the internet, if we all have time, called The Great Ape Project. He is trying for these hybrid attorneys in California to elevate the moral status of old world monkeys to humans. But they're persons, they just can't speak. Have you read that about Peterson? Yeah, The Great Ape Project, it's correct. But that's Peterson. Okay, so a non-person is a non-issue. In evolution and in the minds of many people who deal with them.
What is there a reason to do this for apes?
Well, it's all evolution, that's all. So we want to protect animals. We have an animal protection league. Do we have a human rights protection league? You can't kill or starve a dog, but you can kill or starve a human. There are inconsistencies in our law. If you kill a woman who's pregnant, that could be manslaughter. One or two. But you can have an abortion. It's just simply to say we came from them. And they're important. We've got to consider how important they are because they can do sign language. They can. That's nice and normal. Theistic evolution, this is oxymoronic. No evolutionist can believe in God. But the evolutionist's life is because this is of the great sucking sound of evolution. It draws right into this black hole. And he said, oh, okay, fine. God used the Big Bang. There's no sound in outer space. It's like Star Wars. There's a big whatever. And the Big Bang theory came from about the 1930s from a Frenchman and a Jesuit priest, Lemaitre and Gamow. And they started what's called cosmic seed, and it's about the size of an atom, and somehow it just exploded. So they assumed it had to be noise. But it's not noise in outer space. Okay? It's a big nothing at 10 to the minus, 43 seconds. And then 10 to the minus 35 or so, you had the inflation and the breadability needs to explain that this goes on. I'll show a picture Sunday, tomorrow, in the Bible class on that. And call the inflationary theory. Alan Booth, anybody heard of Alan Booth? Maybe if you're a physicist, MIT, he's the guy that proposed this. And of course, the sun came before the earth, and this year is about 4.6 billion years old. And then you had meteorites and asteroids pummeling the earth, bringing the gases, bubbling up. So from single cells that didn't have a nucleus to single cells that have a nucleus, to multicellular, all the way up, all the water we came from fish, yada, including plants too. And then, of course, eventually we came to more world monkeys over time. Microevolution is fine. We do change within ourselves. But that's the whole story. And that's what you read in biology books. It's interesting. It's still a theory. And you can't prove it with a scientific method. Of course, you can't do that with God's word. We don't care about that. But that's what they say. And the language is, this is what we think. This is the best we have. This has to be the way. I've read articles in magazines that say the universe has to be at least 42 billion years now to for all this to happen. 42. They don't know. So, and God is Mr. Goodrich. He comes and fixes things. Because, you see, God uses the evolutionary process as nothing against the Roman Church, but it did come out this way in 1996. The Pope, calls in scientists and academic sciences. And these are nominated, they're part of his group. They study things, they study creation and evolution. He said, well, this is just one of many theories, creation. And you can't believe in theistic evolution as long as it doesn't interfere with the deposit of faith. church. And I don't know that a lot of them. Catholics believe that, but that's from pretty Pope John Paul II, Pius XII, who has said it's okay to believe in this. That's not my opinion. That's already published. Okay? In Secretaries, 1996, 1950. And God is disconnected. And Adam and Eve evolved, and then all of a sudden they mess up the evolutionary process. So God, of course, when Adam and Eve evolved, he puts the soul directly into them. That's called creationism. We believe the soul was passed along, parent to child somehow. There's another name for that. And then God sends Jesus, his son, to show him how to be more perfect. That's the purpose of baptism, the Lord's Supper. He's a Mr. Goodrich. He's a fixer, not a savior, in theistic evolution. Okay, I'm not going to go abortionally, no, just kill life. We want more perfect people. Genetic engineering, death and dying, death is natural. We talk about homosexuality. It's natural part of evolution. Look at God. Look at world. Yeah, so it's normal. Gay marriage, we'll talk about this maybe later this afternoon if we have time. This is rules specifically in New York City. It's all published. This comes out of Washington Times. We are, this is called Harvard Mount High School for gay children, teenagers. This, you see the political bias. This came out. Is this child gay? Of course, everybody says in here, yes. And then, here you have one of the aspirations of the religious living, but his name doesn't have a baby. And of course, the newspeak says fine. So I'm just saying, be informed, know the politics, avoid being anti. I'm not anti science, but I don't agree with some of the science. Technocrats, you know, left hand simply means we're living in government. We witness. Know the terminology. This is it. Know that the experts rule. If you don't agree with the experts, that the embryo is not a human being, you are out of the picture. And that's why I'm out of the picture at Washington University. I published a letter responding to what they said, and I said, I don't agree with you. They came back again, they published it a second time, and said, I'm disingenuous. I responded scientifically, not theologically, with evidence that they would publish it. But that's the postal dispatch. Okay? Okay, so this is the end. We return to the basics. Where you begin is where you're going to go. Now, any questions before we take a break if you want to make a baby? Anything at all?